Hello, racing fans. Edison Hatter back with another episode of First Over with Edison Hatter. This time we're going to discuss some Saturday evening racing at Woodbine Mohawk. That's Saturday, October the 16th, 2021. And we're also going to discuss, and make sure I say this correctly, that it is Friday. We're going to discuss Friday night racing at Harrah's Hoosier Park, a big night of racing out there with some Indiana Sire Stakes finals, a big 15 race card there. And again, that's going to be Friday, October the 15th. And to help me break down all of this racing, who better to join me than the on-air racing analyst out there at Hoosier Park, Emily Gaskin. Emily, welcome to the show.
Hi, Edison. Thanks for having me. I'm super excited to be here and super excited to talk racing and all things Woodbine and Hoosier Park.
So, Emily, first things first, before we get into some handicapping, we'll talk a little bit about your background. I know your father was a trainer. You went to the University of Kentucky, part of the equestrian team down there. You've been at Hoosier now, I guess, gosh, coming up on 10 years here soon. So tell us all about your background here in the harness racing industry, and I guess horses in general with the equestrian experience at the University of Kentucky.
Yeah, hard to believe it's been 10 years, Edison. I was listening to one of your previous shows, and I think you said you were 23, 21?
22, right in the middle.
Right there in the middle. So yeah, that's kind of when I got started too, you know, talking about my background and things like that. My dad was a trainer, worked for the late, great Billy Houghton. My mom's been in the business her entire life as well. But as a young kid, I wasn't sure really where I fit in as far as the racing scene was concerned. I knew I loved horses, but, you know, our sport's not super conducive to young children. You know, we do have some programs like the Harness Horse Youth Foundation and what have you. But so I went a little different direction. I rode horses. I showed horses competitively. And then, as you said, traveled down to the University of Kentucky, and I rode on the equestrian team down there. I ended up in Lexington, you know, the horse capital of the world. And I felt like what better way to kind of find my way than in Lexington. And that's exactly what happened. I tried a lot of different areas. You know, I thought about going the veterinary route, pharmaceutical sales, and a lot of different things. Eventually, found out that I do truly love marketing, journalism, communications, and the likes. So narrowed down my education into an agriculture communications degree. And really enjoyed the business side of things. Worked for the Horseman and Fair World under Greg Schuler and Kathy Parker and Gordon Waterstone during my time in Lexington. Interesting tidbit that some folks might not know. I also drove the starting car at the Red Mile as my college job. So that was a lot of fun. Had a lot of fun doing that. And I also worked at Rood and Riddle. So when I say I've done a little bit of everything, I really have. And, you know, my parents were in the industry, but they never really, I want to say, pushed it upon me or anything. And I truly did kind of find my own way. Out of college, I went a couple different directions. I worked for the Harness Racing Update. That was kind of my first job out of college, and covered the sales, Harrisburg, Lexington, and a couple different, the Breeders' Crown and things like that. Worked under Bill Finley, and was super appreciative of my opportunity there with him. And then I, you know, was a little unsure where I was going to go. I ended up coming home and working for my parents for a few years. And that's here in Indiana. And interestingly enough, a position opened at Hoosier Park to be the racing publicist. So it really kind of fell in my lap. And I decided to take it. At the time, we were hosting, Harrah's Hoosier Park was hosting thoroughbred racing half of the season and then harness racing half of the season. So I hadn't covered too much thoroughbred racing, so it was a bit of a learning curve for me. I had to learn really quickly. You know, everyone says, oh, racing's racing, but to actually write about it and sound knowledgeable, it was, I had to learn pretty quick, so... I did that for a few years. I was a racing publicist and really enjoyed my time and learned a lot, like I said. And then in 2013, they passed in the state of Indiana what they call one breed, one track. So the thoroughbreds went down to Indiana Grand Racing and Casino, and the standardbreds stayed here at Hoosier Park full time. And in that transition, the gal that was doing the broadcast work decided to stay with the Thoroughbreds. That was kind of her niche market. And so she went down there and they asked me if I wanted to kind of assume the racing commentator, on-air commentator position. And I didn't have a whole lot of broadcast experience. Like I said previously, I had done some communication and journalism and things like that, but didn't have a whole lot of broadcast experience, but decided to challenge myself, took some classes and learned from quite a few folks and started doing the on-air broadcast in 2014 and really, really came to enjoy it, really started handicapping and still continue to learn something new every day when it comes to handicapping. But now I am the, like you said, the on-air commentator. I'm also the race marketing manager and the racing publicist as well. So I do a little bit of everything at Hoosier Park, but, you know, it's a labor of love. I truly enjoy my job and enjoy getting to do what I do every day. So kind of a long spiel to say that, yeah, I love my job.
A lot of good info in there, Emily. We'll cover a couple of those points, but I've got to start, since I heard you mention it in there, that you in college, you said, drove a starting car. You know, I got to do that during qualifiers a couple times down at Rosecroft out of necessity, and I can tell you that is, gosh, at least for me, just a super nerve-wracking experience having being in charge of these horses behind you. But for our listeners, maybe even, you know, people may not know this, more experienced listeners even, that haven't had the opportunity before, I'm just so glad that the starter controls the speed of the car. I thought I had to do that as well. So at least our job as drivers is purely just, you know, to keep it in a straight line. But nonetheless, that at least to me was a challenging job.
A sigh of relief. Yeah, I was the same way. My dad had got the call that they needed a starting gate driver. And I was like, there's no way I'm doing that. And, you know, he kind of challenged me. He's like, you have to at least try it. And I was the same way. I thought there's no way I can do that. But, you know, for the listeners and things like that, there, it really is an art, the art of starting a race. Like you said, anyone I think can learn to drive the car. You know, you just kind of have to, be able to keep it in a straight line. Right. And, not freak out. Like you said, the first couple times in the instinct, the natural instinct, and I think you probably know this is to step on the brake. And that's the last possible thing that you can do. So it's, you got to kind of go against what, you know, what you're taught maybe in driver's ed and, you know, to go slow and touch the brakes and things like that. It's the complete opposite when you're driving the starting gate. So that was interesting. And then, like you said, I was relieved also to know that I wasn't going to be starting it. Mike Moss was the starter when I was driving. And, you know, he is just such a great teacher and he was a great guy to learn from. But yeah, it's a true work of art to be a starter because, you know, two-year-old trotting fillies don't go into the gate the same way that a group of age pacers come into the gate. And so that makes for some interesting interesting racing action, but, you know, it's one of those jobs that I'll never forget, you know, getting to, see the races like that each and every night, is truly something. Seeing, you know, and then being down at the Red Mile and seeing, you know, just the caliber of horses that you see, is truly something. So it's a lot of fun. And I would say, you know, anyone listening, if you ever get the opportunity to ride in the starting car, take it because, you know, you just don't appreciate the horsepower, until you see it that close. So,
yeah, you beat me to it, Emily. I was going to say that for sure. For anyone listening, riding in the starting car, or I guess driving it as well, but riding in it just to get a chance to see them off the gate is just incredible how fast they get up to. And yeah, it's a really, really cool experience for sure. So Emily, so you alluded to it. You kind of beat me to the question here a little bit, but when you started at Hoosier, they were still doing Thoroughbreds. And I think you kind of partially answered this question already, but so do you consider yourself at all a Thoroughbred fan, even to this day a little bit, or is it mostly just Standardbreds for you?
I'm a horse racing fan through and through. So, you know, you put a program in front of me and a race of horses and that I'm going to be handicapping and paying attention. So I'm a horse racing fan, you know, whatever we're racing. So I love Thoroughbred racing. Harness racing is you know, my lifeblood is what I grew up around. And, you know, Edison, I listened to a couple shows too, and I think you can probably attest to this too, is that they sometimes do get a bad rap that, you know, everyone in harness racing, you know, grew up in harness racing, and it's not like that at all. You know, I didn't grow up in thoroughbred racing, but I'm a fan of thoroughbred racing. And as a matter of fact, I'm actually venturing to Keeneland this weekend, just to get back there because I love horse racing so much. And, so, you know, anyone that says that, you know, to be in racing or to be employed in racing, you have to have grown up in it. I would completely, you know, falsify that because you just have to love racing and appreciate it. And that's what I do. So I enjoy thoroughbred racing because I truly think that it's a challenge for me. You know, harness racing, like I said, I, you know, watch it each and every night. And so thoroughbred racing, handicapping and analyzing the races and things like that and all the different angles, right? So everyone always, when I went to school in Lexington, you know, everyone wanted to say, oh, I don't understand harness racing. I'm like, how can you say that? They go 1 mile, you know, on the dirt, you know, there's not all these other angles. So that's what I actually enjoy about thoroughbred racing is kind of all the different angles that they throw at you and the different handicapping angles to find and things like that. So I don't do it often. I don't, you know, handicap thoroughbred racing a whole lot, but I do really enjoy it and I enjoy following it. You know, I think thoroughbreds racing and a few of the big tracks, they do such a great job of covering the sport. And I'm oftentimes envious of the coverage that thoroughbred racing receives versus harness racing. So I truly appreciate that and all the work that goes into it. And just like I said, I'm a fan of horse racing, whether it be thoroughbred racing or harness racing.
Yeah, I definitely myself kind of started as a thoroughbred fan before working on the standardbred side. And definitely myself also consider myself one that appreciates both breeds. Heck, I'll even watch some quarter horses at Los Alamitos. So any type of racing I for sure enjoy and watch. But Emily, speaking of broadcasting on the standardbred side, one of at least our biggest presentations every year on the standardbred side is usually the CBS Sports presentation of the Hamiltonian at the Meadowlands. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe your first time doing it this year, joining us at the Big M for Hamiltonian Day to broadcast for CBS Sports.
Yeah, it was an honor, Edison. Didn't get a chance to meet you, unfortunately. It was kind of a whirlwind trip. But yeah, it was my first time doing CBS. Not my first time to the Hamiltonian. I've been to the Hamiltonian a number of times, but it was my first time covering it. Had just a phenomenal experience. I can't thank Moira and the folks at the Hamiltonian Society enough for providing me with the opportunity. I worked with Greg Blanchard, and he was a great co-host. I was, you know, pretty nervous. It's been a minute since I got nervous doing broadcast, you know, just because it's something that I do every night and something that I love to do. And it just, you know, has kind of become second nature to me. But it was the first time that I had been nervous in a minute. And so did a lot of studying but really, really enjoyed myself. It was just a phenomenal weekend. And like I said, just love everything about the Meadowlands and the product there. So it was an honor to get to co-host that production.
Yes, unfortunately, we get a chance to meet. I know I was busy in the back paddock and up on the set, kind of felt like back and forth all day. But nonetheless, a really great day. For me, it was my first Hamiltonian. It was, yeah. You know, it's funny. The story I've gone with is every year my family's reunion always falls on that first Saturday in August, and I was never able to get the excuse out of it to go see the Hamiltonian. So now that I'm finally working it, that was enough of an excuse to get me out of it.
I like it.
But that's okay. You know what? I've got, at the end of next month, my cousin is going to, in her freshman year, she is at the University of Tennessee. Okay. And I'm trying to plan the trip. I'm hoping to try to hit some spots out there. I know you guys are, I think I looked it up, about 5.5 hours north. But nonetheless, hoping to at least hit the Red Mile, at least see some of these places, Keeneland, Churchill Downs. I know, unfortunately, not racing this time of year, but at least check them out a little bit. And I might even hope to venture up as far north as Hoosier Park and maybe get a chance to see a little bit of racing up there for sure. I always hear good things about the track there. So very jealous you get to work there every day.
Yeah, so it's not far. If you do venture up to Keeneland, you know, they do all the tours and things like that, even when they're not racing at Keeneland. And it's truly something to see. So I hope you're able to do it. The Kentucky Horse Park, the Red Mile, it's all right there. And then, you know, it's actually a really easy drive. It's about 2.5 hours if you're in Lexington. So if you're able to do it, it would certainly, you know, be worth it. You could actually hit Indiana Grand on your way. It's in between here and the Red Mile. So you could stop at Indiana Grand in Shelbyville. And you won't believe me when I say, but they're both literally in the middle of two cornfields, but I promise they're not hard to get. They're not hard to get to.
Oh man. Well, now that you got me, got the wheels turning here, man, I'm going to have to look at this trip here. That's a good one. Can see, Bill Downs, Rachel McLaughlin at Indiana Grand, see you, Michael Chamberlain at Hoosier, and, yeah, check out some Kentucky on the way. I think I might have a plan here then for the end of next month.
We can get your whole, trip mapped out. You know, you don't need MapQuest or anything. We can, I can be your travel agent and we can set you, up.
Oh boy, well, there we go. We got something to talk about later off the air. But Emily, I mentioned the name in there, and I'll ask you about that before we move on to some handicapping of our own. But Michael Chamberlain, first year announcing there at Hoosier Park, what has he been like to work with coming from the thoroughbred side down at Evangeline up to the standardbred side there at Hoosier Park?
Yeah, you know, he's been an absolute pleasure to work with. And, you know, to be completely honest, I wasn't all that familiar with him before he started with Hoosier Park. I had obviously listened to a few of his calls at Evangeline and a few other places, but wasn't too familiar with his work. And so when he came on, and interestingly enough, I was on maternity leave. I had my first baby in January. So I was on maternity leave and I came back. My first day back to work was literally opening night. And so that's when I met Michael for the first time. But he has been just an absolute pleasure to work with. You know, it kind of takes an interesting dynamic, you know, working with somebody so closely. Like, we host the pre-race show each and every night and then do a little bit of handicapping here and there. And, you know, just like talk shows or things like that. I mean, the chemistry really has to be there. Like, you can't fake it. And he's just been such a professional. And that, to me, is what I like as far as, you know, working styles and things like that. You know, everybody kind of has their own, kind of gimmick, if you will, but, he's just been a super professional from the start and just super easy to work with. And, you know, I was worried honestly, because I know that it was a little bit hard for me to kind of get to make that switch from harness racing to thoroughbred racing. But he's just made it seamlessly as far as, you know, calling thoroughbred races into harness races. He did have some harness racing experience, you know, prior to working here, and he called a few races and things like that. So he had some experience, but, you know, it's been a seamless transition. I thought for sure that I'd have to say, hey, you can't say this, or hey, you shouldn't say this. And no, I really haven't. He's, you know, really, not only has he done a great job, like, from the start, but as far as handicapping and things like that, I mean, he has really done the work and, you know, he has just done a great job. So it's been super refreshing for me because, like I said, you work so closely with somebody and, you know, you don't want somebody that you don't get along with, or, you know, maybe your styles don't complement each other, you know, what have you. But he's just been so fun to work with and has just taken to harness racing like a fish in water. So that's been great to see. You know, Steve Cross was here from the beginning, so he had some big shoes to fill. And, you know, and I was worried for him for that too, because, you know, everyone around here loves Steve Cross. I loved working with Steve Cross, but Michael has been a great transition. And I think all the folks and racing fans would agree. So it's been a lot of fun to, you know, and when you get somebody new in here, you know, they ask questions that, you know, maybe you take advantage. You know, they ask questions about, you know, certain drivers and driving styles and things like that. And it kind of brings a fresh perspective, which is always fun. So that makes it fun as well.
Yeah, Steve Frost definitely enjoyed listening to his race calls. Some really good ones last year. I remember in the Breeders' Crown, I'm out there at Hoosier Park, but for sure, Michael Chamberlain has filled those shoes very well this year. And hopefully maybe we can even get him on the show here sometime as a guest when he's not busy calling some races, which I think he's doing right now as we speak here.
He is. Yeah, he's busy right now just watching the races. But that's the other thing. He's so, you know, involved and invested. We've done a couple post draws and things like that. And, you know, I'm always here because that's what I do. And so, you know, I've pitched it to him. I'm like, hey, we're doing these post draws. And he's like, yeah, I'll be there. No problem. And so he loves to do that kind of stuff. And I'm sure he'd love to be a guest on the show sometime. So yeah, you'll have to ask him.
Well, that's good. We will certainly get him on here sometime. But for now, Emily, it's time for us to get to some handicapping.
All right.
We will start with this Saturday night, Woodbine Mohawk Card, Saturday, October the 16th, 2021, a 12-race program up there. And they also have some sire stakes on the card. A lot of Ontario Sire Stakes Gold Super Finals going for $225,000. But first things first, we'll start with this early pick five. 20-cent base wager, $100,000 guaranteed pool, as always, races 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. And you and I both have tickets to give out. And, you know, some of these super finals can get a little formful. So we are both going with cheaper tickets, $10.80 for you, $7.20 for me. But we'll jump right in here. Race 1, before we get into those super finals, this is a conditioned event. Non-winners of $5,200 in their last 5 starts, or non-winners of $10,000 in the last 10 starts, on the pace for $14,000. And you are going to use 3 in here to kick off the sequence.
Yeah, I thought this was kind of an interesting race. You've got some horses bouncing around, some horses moving up, and some horses that are certainly racing interestingly. Like I said, I went 3 deep in here to the 3, 4, and 7. My top choice in there is the 7, Beach and Lindy. Bob McClure drives. This horse made a break last time out, so a bit of a question mark for me there. But I think, dropping down in class, I think he's really obviously going to like the drop in class. Not crazy about the outside post draw. As the horse doesn't look like he shows a whole lot of gate speed, but as you look to the inside, it does look like there are some horses that that can leave a little bit, including a few of the other horses that I used. A horse that's really interesting in here to me is the 3, always a hot shot. This horse, obviously, speed, not a question. He's got a mark of 50, but just 3 starts on this season. So it looks like, he started out early, had some issues, or they just decided to give him some time. He's had 2 qualifiers, and then last week paced home in 27-1, 51-4, first start off the bench. And that's a big effort for that much time off. So it'll be interesting to me to see how they decide to race him. I think if they're aggressive with him, I think that, if he's ready to go and they race him aggressively, I think that he certainly poses a big threat in here.
Yes, similar type numbers for me. So you go 3, 4, and 7 here. For me, it'll be 3, 6, 7 in the opener. I'm agreeing with you with the 3, always a hot shot, the 7, Beach and Lindy. But again, we'll throw in the 6 for me here. Grand Poobah, who was racing against similar company last week, finished 2nd in there. Has been rounding into pretty good form here lately. Couple of nice post draws here. Post 6 tonight for him. Should show some gate speed here. The only negative is that he just does not like to win a lot. A lot of seconds and thirds.
Yeah,
just 2 wins. In 62 starts the last 2 seasons, so that's the concern. But 3, 6, 7 for me, 3, 4, 7 for you. And as we move on to race 2, this is the first of those Ontario Sire Stakes Gold Super Finals, the 2-year-old Filly Pacers for $225,000, and you are going to single a 2-year-old Filly Pacer.
Yeah, pressure's on. At least it's not a 2-year-old Filly Trotter. It's a 2-year-old Filly Pacer. So the pressure's on here. But, if you're going to single one, she's got $451,000, so... and that's kind of, as I approach a sequence, that's kind of what I try to do is, take a look at the whole sequence and then, really kind of hone in if I can find a single. And this is where I found it. This is where I felt most confident or, I felt the strongest. And I think Prohibition Legal, just missed 2 starts back in the Great Lady against the great Nikki Hill, who, of course, has been undefeated. And honestly, when I was watching that race, I thought she was going to get the job done to Nikki Hill. And that speaks to just kind of the competitiveness of Prohibition Legal here. Then she bounces back and wins the Ontario Sire Stakes last week in 50-4. But, Edison, anytime a filly, I don't care, trotter, pacer, 2-year-old, 3-year-old, if they win 7 of 8, just like you were talking about the horse in that first race, it doesn't, necessarily camera shy, doesn't like to get the job done. This filly obviously knows how to find the winner's circle, knows how to find the line, and that goes a long way with me. So I single Prohibition Legal. I think it's going to take a big effort. As I was looking down the field, I oftentimes try to beat the favorites when approaching a race, and this is one that I just couldn't find a likely horse that I felt, even with a perfect trip and all things went in their favor, to beat Prohibition Legal. So, all signs point to a single for me, and so I'm going to be sweating it out in the second race, hoping that she gets the job done in here.
Well, it's tough for me to go against you there. I almost singled her as well, but I did have to throw in the 3, Silver Label. Talking about ones that like to win, they're the 2 obvious ones in this field. Silver Label, 6-for-7 lifetime herself, her only defeat coming last time out. And it was, of course, 2 Prohibition Legal. Kind of some interesting tactics in that race. They both floated away mid-pack. Silver Label took over before the half. Prohibition Legal ended up having to come up first over. And nonetheless, just, you know, a 2-5 was too much, and Prohibition Legal got the job done. So it'd be interesting to see what the tactics are here, especially inside post for Silver Label, the outside post for Prohibition Legal. So you've got to assume Silver Label is at least going to leave, and Sylvain's at least going to do everything he can to try to steal this one on the front end. But yeah, I will not be surprised to see Prohibition Legal win in the slightest. But 3-7 for me, the single, 2-7 for you in race two. So race three, the Ontario Sire Stakes Gold Super Final, the two-year-old filly trotters for $225,000. And, well, we were just talking about you singling a two-year-old filly pacer. I'll one-up you. How about if I single a two-year-old filly trotter?
I like your style. I like it. I like it.
Got to go with the A-tier at Derry Castle. 6-for-8 lifetime. Just the 2 second place finishes. And she's just been in fantastic form. She obviously always takes a lot of money off her start. She will likely be a heavy favorite here. And, you know, you look through her form lines, you know, the most recent defeat in there in the Peaceful Way, she's beaten by 2 lengths by Venerable, who I think we all know what type of two-year-old trotter she's going to be.
Yeah, exactly. I highlighted that. That was, you know, when I first looked at the race, that kind of jumped off the page at me, you know, resolving in a few of these others, obviously raced against her too. But went back, I watched that Peaceful Way. And like you said, I mean, that was a game second to, you know, arguably the best two-year-old trotting filly that we've seen in a number of years. Obviously Manchego a few years back, but Venerable. Wow. Yeah, that was a big effort. So, you know, I'm with you. I used her. I didn't single her, but, you know, she certainly does kind of jump off the page here.
Yeah, I mean, you know, beating only by 2 lengths that Peaceful Way, a really good effort for her. And, you know, Venerable, gosh, really horse of the year possible conversation yeah. for her. But, yeah, as you mentioned, you don't single her, but you do use another horse who was also in a Venerable race, finishing only 5 3/4 lengths back as a second place finisher to Venerable as well.
Yeah, Dabra Day from the Meg Crone Barn. She's got 176,000 made, which, you know, is kind of going back and looking. And again, talking about, you know, that winning ability. And this filly's won 4 of 9. And, you know, a lot of times I think that when, you know, these fillies, when the money's on the line and you know, and you're kind of talking about the end of the season here, you know, we're talking about the Peaceful Way and these fillies have got 9, 10, 11 starts. They really got to dig deep. And so, you know, when you talk about a filly that, you know, has won 4 of 9, that shows that she kind of has that guts and the winning ability. So, you know, if something was to be crazy and a Derek Castle, you know, got pressed, which, you know, as well as I do, when a lot of money's on the line, things can get a little crazy, even though they look pretty formful on the paper, when the, you know, the money's on the line, things can get crazy. So if something was to happen, a Derek Castle get pressed or things like that, I think you could look for a filly like Dabra Day, who again, you know, has been racing well, who's racing with a lot of confidence, you know, could certainly provide a small price and perhaps pick up the pieces if a Derek Castle was to misstep.
So single to a Derek Castle for me, the 8 and the 10 for you in race 3. Race 4, we're both going 3 deep here. I use the 138, you use the 148, and this is the Ontario Sire Stakes Gold Super Final. Now we're up to the 3-year-old filly Pacers for $225,000. We'll let you talk about your three selections first.
Yeah, so Scarlett Hanover is super impressive in the Jughead final, you know, in her elimination and then also the final. And, you know, oftentimes, Edison, we talk about the Jughead going 2 heats, you know, did that take a lot out of them? And so you go back, you watch her last start, and this filly was just absolutely flying late. And, you know, they did kind of what you thought, what a lot of people probably thought they do. They gave her some time off, obviously, off of that big effort in Delaware. Then, you know, I don't want to say race her easy, but gave her a trip, and she responded. So that's what you want to see. She paced home in 26-1. Philly's got 763,000 made lifetime. That obviously doesn't happen by accident. You get Yannick Gingra to drive. So have to believe that they're going to be aggressive with her in here, obviously, with the favorable post position. So I really like Scarlett Hanover in this spot. Like I said, you know, late in the season, things can sometimes get a little crazy, but this is a filly that just looks like she's, you know, is still very, very sharp. I also use the 4, but my second choice in there is the Voel's Delight. I think I'm saying that right.
I think it's Voel's Delight. I think that's what I've heard most.
Okay, Voel's Delight. Voel's Hanover, who, you know, obviously she's an incredible mare in her own regard here. 3-year-old filly by Better's Delight. This one, another one that really impressed me last start. She paced home in 25 and 4. She really got shuffled back in that same race with Scarlett Hanover, but she, you know, 10 more feet. And I think this filly was a winner. So that shows me that, you know, she's also kind of trending in that right direction. And she's the type of filly that shows quite a bit of versatility, which I like. So not crazy about the outside post draw here, but she shows that she's raced on the front. That Fan Hanover, she left alertly, set the pocket, finished second to the Great Fire Start Hanover. So I thought that was a big effort. And then last week, like I said, you know, just got shuffled and just absolutely flew home. There were three, four fillies across the track there, and a length separated them all. So I really like her in this spot. You know, Scarlett Hanover doesn't get the job done. And then I also use Bet on Becky. This is another one that, you know, really kind of intrigues me. I think she's going to be the price in here. She's 8-1 on the morning line, and I think she'll be even higher come post time. But she's racing with a lot of confidence as well. Three consecutive victories, obviously stepping up in class, and she's gonna need quite a few things to go her way. But just, you know, based on her current form, a filly that made $150,000 as a 2-year-old, and she's, you know, pretty lightly raced here. She took a bit of time off. She had some races, then they qualified her, and looks like that time off has really helped her. She had a few starts in the Ontario Sire Stakes early. And then, as I said, looks like she took about a month off, qualified, and she was racing in against a little softer. And looks like it really helped her. She's won her last two races by a combined 6.25 length. So, you know, a filly that, again, I think is kind of trending in the right direction, and a filly that I think is going to provide a really nice price come post time.
So 1-4-8 for you in race 4. 1-3-8 for me with you with Scarlett Hanover. Yeah, huge effort there in the Jughead, and then a nice effort that last time out. Vol's Delight as well has been really good form there lately. And yeah, that was a huge last quarter for her last time out in that Scarlett Hanover race. But another one coming out of that Scarlett Hanover race was the 3, the Barn Dogs Watching, who also was coming with Vol's Delight late. Finished 4th in there, beat by 3/4 of a length, 26 seconds for her last quarter. And she's got a couple Ontario Sire Stakes win in there. A nice post draw here for this super final. So for sure, I think she's in with a chance too. So it's 1-3-8 for me in race 4. We move on to the payoff leg, race 5. On the trot, 225,000 Ontario Sire Stakes gold super final, 3-year-old colts and geldings. And for me, not getting too creative here again. I think the 2 to beat, they're on the outside part of the gate. But Fashion Frenzy, of course, has been racing super well lately. Just had that 3-race win streak broken in the Canadian Trotting Classic, but obviously losing some very good horses in there, $100 Bill and In Range. The most recently disappointed at 1-9 against Logan Park in Ontario Sire Stakes, but hopefully he will be on his game here for the final tonight. And the 9 to break to the outside, the aforementioned Logan Park, 5 wins now from 12 starts this year. Hit a little bit of a rough patch there through the Canadian Trotting Classic and the good times, but has been really good in these Ontario Sire Stakes races. And again, that includes, most recently, when defeating your likely favorite of post-time Fashion Frenzy. So it's the 8 and the 9 for me, but you are going to use one other in here, Emily.
Yeah, so, you know, like you said, it was hard for me to tell, too. That fog was for real. I didn't watch it live, but I was going back as I was handicapping, watching some replays, and that fog was for real. So it was a little hard to tell if, you know, Logan Park, obviously a benefactor of the pocket trip. It was hard to tell if Fashion Frenzy maybe just got caught sleeping and, you know, just Logan Park kind of pounced on him. And it was just, like I said, there was some fog, so it was kind of hard to tell, you know, which it was, if Fashion Frenzy just fell asleep or if Logan Park really was that big. So I used both of those. Like you said, I think they Fashion Frenzy obviously is the one to beat. And, you know, looks like his game is get to the front if he can get fractions his way, which I think makes things interesting for Logan Park, because obviously drawing to his outside, he's going to want to, you know, be right there. So I think that kind of makes things interesting. But talking about an interesting trip is the 6 Lexus Cody Trevor Henry. This horse first up last week on the 2 previous mentioned, was 3rd best, finished, you know, quite a few lengths back. But, you know, you go back previously earlier on in the season, this colt shows trotting in 52 and 4, and, you know, nobody better in these big events at Woodbine Mohawk Park than Trevor Henry. And so I think if anybody's going to work out a good trip, it could be Lexus Cody. And with the 2, you know, kind of, we'll say favorites drawing to the outside, I think, you know, could set up for Lexus Cody, who, again, went with our top 2 in that last start. Obviously, he needs to step up his game a little bit. But like I said, crazy things happen in these finals, and this colt's shown that he's capable of going with them. So I included him for a price.
He has. If you look back in those August lines, I'm just kind of looking down now at those Ontario Cider Stakes. He split the pair in August 23rd, you know, beating Logan Park, finishing half length behind Fashion Frenzy, and was just a length and three quarters off of both of them August the 9th. So for sure he's proven he can go with them. And yeah, it should be interesting to see the pace develop. Yeah, Logan Park, that replay is tough to watch just because of all the fog. Feel for the charter, for sure.
Yeah, I felt bad for Ken, too, the announcer. I mean, you know, you've got Trackus, so I'm sure that helped a little bit. But, geez, that was bad. It's been a minute since I had watched a race with that bad of fog. Of course, right now at Hoosier Park, it's torrentially downpouring, so I don't envy the announcer or the drivers right now either.
Yeah, for sure. That was some wicked fog. I know we had some of the Meadowlands early this winter, and yeah, that stuff can be tough. But anyway, Logan Park, with the inside poster all that night, did get to the top early, like the first eighth of a mile. Fashion Frenzy parred for the opening quarter, did eventually clear the top, and then right, it appears they just kind of went the rest of the way, and then Logan Park was able to pop the pocket there past three quarters. It does end up getting by half a length, and then yeah, just kind of pounced on him late, came home just a little quicker than Fashion Frenzy, but for sure they'll take a lot of the money here. And yeah, the six Lexus Cody may be the way to go for you. So to recap our tickets, Emily, for you it is 3-4-7 with 7, with 8-10, with 1-4-8, with 6-8-9 for a $10.80 play. And for me it'll be 3-6-7 with 3-7, with 8, with 1-3-8, with 8-9 for a $7.20 investment. So next, Emily, we'll do this a little differently than usual, just with time constraints. No time to go through all of these races, either on the Woodbine Mohawk card or on the Hoosier card. So we'll just give out some best bets and long shots to talk about the rest of the card. So there's four additional Ontario Cider Stakes Gold Superfinals at Woodbine Mohawk, and we'll start in race 7, the Ontario Cider Stakes Gold Superfinal for the two-year-old Colt and Geldings on the pace for $225,000. And here it will be, I believe, my turn to give out my long shot here, trying the 4, Colby Two-Step, who had a good qualifier last time out. He's coming off some time off here since September the 4th. But is 3-for-5 here, and I think could be a reasonable alternative to some of these favorites to the inside. Stonebridge Helios, of course, has been superb, hasn't finished outside the top two in his most recent. Aaron Wood Eves has also been in the money for an all six starts, and Better Have My Money, the Battle of Waterloo winner on Industry Day at Grand River, is 4 wins this year. But Colby Two-Step, again, 3-for-5 so far, the lightly raced two-year-old. And yeah, this was just a really good qualifier last time out. It's been good in some of those Ontario Sire Stakes events. And for me, this will be the possible alternative to those favorites. So it's 6-1 on the morning line, the 4 Colby Two-Step, my long shot play there in race 7. But again, Stonebridge Helios, Aaron Wood Eves, and Better Have My Money, right to the inside, likely taking a lot of the money there. As we go on to race 8, that one's on the trot for $225,000, the Ontario Cider Stakes Gold Superfinal, 2-year-old Colts and Geldings. Neither you nor I have a price play or a best bet here, but we will just mention quickly that Dually Resolved will be your 6-5 favorite there. He has been just superb, has not finished outside of the top two in his 9 starts, 5 wins so far this year. Tunby Archie, though, comes off of a very convincing victory of Flamborough by 4.5 at 1-9. Has 3 wins as well from 9 starts, so those two will take a lot of the money there in that full field of 10 for that Sire Stakes final.
The Dually Resolved, it'd be interesting to see Edison. I know she was, they got pretty close to her at the Meadowlands on Hamiltonian Day, but that was as close as I think I've seen anybody get to Venerable Dually Resolved in that Mohawk Million. You know, there for a second, I you know, got a little, it seemed a little pressure for Venerable. Obviously, she's a great filly and does what great fillies do, and that's grind out the victory. But Dually Resolved really put up a big effort. Like I said, I don't follow Venerable maybe as closely as you or some of the other folks that do. But it'd be interesting to see, if that was as close as anybody's got to her. And that was a big effort by Dually Resolved, and he draws the rail here. So have to believe that he's going to be heavily, heavily favored.
Yeah, it certainly was. Finishing just a head back of Venerable in that Mohawk Million from post 8, no less, that night.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, loses to King of the North in the Wellwood final. That was a heck of an effort. I mean, I talk about it all the time on the show. I'm sure listeners are sick of it at this point, but that Wellwood elimination, that replay through the stretch, just digging in, refusing to let to do it by. So for sure, from the rail, especially, the last thing he needed was an advantage with the post position draw. He will be heavily, heavily favored in there, and rightly so.
Very much so. Similar story in the 9th race, though. I think personally, that's why I got my best bet in there, but I think Bulldog Hanover will be heavily favored in there as well.
Race 9, and we actually have competing best bets here in the Ontario Sire Stakes World Super Final. Three-year-old Colt and Gelding Pacers for $225,000. So we'll start with you. You can make the case for, yes, the likely favored Bulldog Hanover.
I like it. We're just jumping right in. We're going head-to-head here. We're going to sweat it out in the early pick five with two different singles, and then we're going to put our best bets up against one another. This is fun old-fashioned handicapping. I love it.
Yeah, I'll tell you, mine is Power Train, if that'll affect your explanation here. But I'm going Power Train. You're going Bulldog Hanover.
Well, you know, then rightfully so. Power Train, obviously, on a heck of a roll. But I am going to Bulldog Hanover. You know, this horse, obviously, and interesting that I, you know, am using him because, dare I say, he's been disappointing in his last two. Disappointing because of the way that they set this horse up, right? Jody Jameson saying that, you know, he could be one of the best horses that he's ever driven. And, you know, he's been highly touted. And hate to say that he's been disappointing, but did finish fourth in that North American Cup after some pretty soft fractions. So the horse has something to prove. And that's the reason why I'm using him as my best bet here. You know, Jody Jameson doesn't go out on a limb and say things like that about a horse, you know, unless he truly believes in one. So, you know, and I've watched the horse all season long. He's at 690,000 made lifetime. He's another one of those that, you know, aside from his last two starts, has really shown that he's got that winning ability. He's a well-bred son. Interestingly enough, he's out of BJ's Squall, who is a full sister to Courtly Choice and the likes. They're both by Lady Ashley Ann. So he's got some pedigree on his side. He's by Shadow Play, of course, who's had a phenomenal year. And like I said, he's got some proving to do. He's been a little disappointing in his last two. And when he's on his game, this horse is, you know, as strong as I've seen, you know, a colt race up at Woodbine. It was just absolutely impressive in that Some Beat Somewhere Stakes up there in 48-2. And, you know, his versatility, I think, really, really bodes well for this horse with this inside post draw. So I'm going to go with Bulldog Hanover. Like I said, I think he's got something to prove. I think he's got the talent to do it. And, you know, kind of he's shown that this is his home court. And so I'm going to go to Bulldog Hanover with his versatility. And to your point, Edison, that Power Train obviously is racing super competitively. But he, to me, looks like he does his best work on the front. So I'm hoping Bulldog Hanover gets a two-hole trip behind your best bet, Power Train.
Well, the logic for me here is certainly Bulldog Hanover will be the favorite and probably deservedly so. But, you know, obviously trying to beat the favorite here, I think that'll help the odds for sure on Power Train. And, you know, Bulldog Hanover, I love this horse. In fact, it's one of the first ones I ever got to talk about on this show was him winning that Ontario Sire Stakes event on Hamiltonian night when we first started this show. And he's just been so super impressive with some of his miles. But, you know, I'm thinking maybe, I mean, if you watch some of those replays in July and August, there were some hard-fought victories for Bulldog Hanover and some really tough miles. So I think maybe late in the season, maybe some of that's catching up to him. And maybe he's a little vulnerable right now. Obviously disappointing twice in a row here as the odds on favorite. So the four Power Train, again, in defeating Bulldog Hanover last week, just went right down the road. Obviously, Bulldog Hanover had to do him further off the pace, so he may very well just get the right trip here tonight. But Power Train, gosh, I mean, those fractions, 27-1, 54-1, 122-2, and led all the way. Got a little tired towards the end there, 27-1 kicker, but did finish off the job by three-quarters of the length. And the one that might actually be both of us, Emily, we got to, of course, mention, is the Five Desperate Man. A huge victory at 7-1 for him in the North America Cup. But it's come back to disappoint a little bit recently, including that fourth-place effort recently. In a top-level conditioned event, but nonetheless, he definitely has the credentials as well to be competitive here.
Yeah, obviously, that was a huge effort in North America. But, you know, Trevor Henry saying on the post-race interview that, you know, in that limb, he got a little steppy behind the gate. You know, maybe doesn't seem as handy, I guess I'll say, as a horse like Bulldog Hanover or Power Train. Kind of needs some things to go his way. And I think that's where you see, you know, last week finished fourth because he got shuffled back. He's, you know, not one of those horses. And of course, I say that naturally, he'll probably be on the front tomorrow night or tonight. But nonetheless, I think, you know, he's kind of the victim of the trip and needs things to work out as far as he's a little pace dependent. But obviously talent, he's right up there with the top two that we've been talking about. So yes, like you said, certainly need to mention him. And obviously I think he'll be the price in here if you're looking to try to beat Bulldog Hanover, who, you know, is not going to provide much of a price. And honestly, I don't think Power Train will either. So if you're, you know, going to swing for the fences, try to beat him. I think Desert Man is the obvious candidate there.
Yeah, for sure. You know, I think that may be the benefit, if we're looking at the three of them head-to-head-to-head, I think maybe it's the benefit of your selection with Bulldog Hanover. Powertrain has really turned into a different horse these last two, going to the front and just not looking back from there.
Exactly.
And maybe that's the way he needs to race. Desperate Man, for sure, likes to do it kind of off the pace and kind of has to get the right trip and get things to go his way. Bulldog Hanover has done it first over. He's done it parked the whole mile. He's done it from the lead. He can do it anything. So, for sure, he's got the tactical advantage in that sense, especially, as you mentioned, these super finals where, you know, anything can happen pace-wise, trip-wise, for sure. He can pretty much overcome anything that's thrown at him. So, Emily, we got to flip back to race seven. Wait a minute. You never stopped me here. The good news is I read it and went with it, and I like the selection as well, but I read your long shot. My long shot comes in race 10. It was yours in race 7 with Colby Two-Step. So anything else to add to what I said?
No, I was actually patting myself on the back because I'm thinking, hey, we got the same long shot. I like it. We looked at the program, and we nailed down on the same horse. But the only thing I will say, as in, you know, for all the things that you said, I like Colby Two-Step, but I really like this race. I think if you're going to try to find some prices, there's a couple horses that I like in here. I like the 10 Magical Arthur too. And so, you know, as I was handicapping, this was a race that I really felt, you know, you're not going to have a heavy favorite. Whoever is favored come post time, I think they'll be, you know, lightly favored. They'll be a susceptible favorite. So I think that you can, you know, don't settle for a short price in the seventh race. You know, and like I said, for all the reasons that you mentioned, I like Colby Two-Step. The colt showed 51 speed, and you were just talking about Bulldog Hanover late in this season. Kind of the opposite here. This colt showed quite a bit of speed. It looks like they gave him some time off, and they've now got him back qualified and ready to go. You know, and for a two-year-old to just five starts, that's exactly what you want to see. He's got 100,000. That's a very nice two-year-old campaign for a colt that showed 51 speed. So I do like that. Doug McNair opting to stick with him. So I think that speaks highly of him as well. You know, like I said, there were a few other horses in here that I think may provide a little bit of a price, but I really like Colby Two-Step. So that's my price play tonight. Or yes, that's my price play.
So Colby Two-Step for you, race 7. For me, my price play will make it race 10. I'm going to try the 4 Hawaii in there. The eight HP Mama B is your 2-1 morning line favorite there. But, you know, the outside post comes off the vet 6 scratch. It comes off a bit of a layoff as well since then, you know, with that qualifier that, you know, looked okay. But nonetheless, I think could be a vulnerable favorite here. So the 4 Hawaii, we'll try this one. A couple outside posts recently, a couple tough trips there in the Sire Stakes and in a conditioned event. But in the Casual Breeze back on September the 3rd, a really good effort from Post 5, showed more gate speed than usual, took over past the half, had a 2.5 length lead at the top of the stretch, unfortunately couldn't hold on, was beaten by a length as your 6-5 favorite there. So maybe those tactics might be back for her again tonight here with that inside post draw, especially with some of her main rivals to the outside. 10-1 on the morning line, the only knock against her, she is over 10 this year, but she does have 3 wins last year, so she has won in the past, and, you know, if there's ever a time for your first win of the season in a $225,000 Sire Stakes final, is definitely a good spot for it, right?
Yeah, I'm with you there. Yeah, exactly like you said. You know, and I did take a long look at this filly, but like you said, the 0 for 10 scared me a little bit, but like you said, if you're going to, you know, break your seasonal maiden now, that's a great that's a great time to do it, so I'm with you on that.
So that wraps up our Woodbine Mohawk talk. You can get a free program for Saturday evening Woodbine Mohawk at woodbine.com/free-programs. And with that, we will switch over to Harrah's Hoosier Park. And Emily, you know, I always ask my guests a handicapping question. And, you know, I guess we'll kind of, in some sense, maybe let you off the hook a little bit easy here. But for our listeners that may choose to bet this Friday night program, but maybe not be familiar with the Hoosier Park surface, talk to us a little bit about what the gamblers may want to look at in terms of how, say, wind affects the track, the long stretch at Hoosier for sure, you know, how that kind of plays into it, passing lane, any other sort of handicapping, you know, things that you think our listeners should know for Hoosier Park.
Well, we were talking about Woodbine Edison, and I think that Woodbine and Hoosier Park speed and the track configuration, there's a lot of correlation there. I think the track speed and speed figures and things like that set up a lot the same. Like you said, extremely long stretch. Interestingly enough, if you're playing Hoosier Park for this Friday card, these are horses that have been racing here in the Indiana Sire Stakes. So it's our annual Hoosier Champions Night, over $2 million in purses. All of these horses have been racing in Hoosier Park. Typically, though, you know, if you see horses coming in from places like Ohio on those short tracks, you know, even like the Meadows and things like that, it typically does take a start or two for them to really get acclimated. You know, the way that the race is set up, the way that the speed sets up, that's a very, very long stretch. And, you know, it does take horses a little bit of time to really kind of get used to it. So a lot of times, you know, there'll be horses that are chipping in here. I wait them and give them a start or two before I really kind of jump on board. But fortunately, like I said, for this Friday night card, a number of these horses have been racing here. So they're all very familiar with that long quarter mile stretch. Unfortunately, looks like we're going to be dealing with some sloppy conditions. We got a pretty significant chance of rain. But this track, you know, typically holds up pretty well. I'm going to knock on wood. I'm not going to try to jinx us. But this track does hold up pretty well. It does take a considerable amount of rain, where some tracks, like obviously like the Red Mile, and that really becomes soupy and sloppy. This track, you know, does take its fair share of water, so doesn't seem to hinder it too much. Wind is a factor, obviously, down the long stretch. And honestly, Edison, the biggest advice that I could give is pay attention. This track can be a little speed biased sometimes. You know, front end speed doesn't always hold up. Wind does play a factor. So a lot of times what I do is I'll play the first few races and, you know, kind of see how things are shaking out. Is front end speed holding up? You know, setting up for a lot of closers. You know, and then, you know, adjust my strategy accordingly. Last little bit there is that we do have a passing lane. So it makes for, you know, kind of some interesting racing. It seems like horses are gunning for position in the first turn. They sit and then, you know, it's a cavalry charge to the wire, inside, outside. And, you know, if you've got a live horse, typically they'll get some room and be able to have a fair shot at the wire. So I think it makes for some exciting racing here, you know, down that long stretch, like I said, but certainly makes things interesting as well. Like I said, they oftentimes got a gun for position into that first turn. So if you're playing, like I said, I oftentimes watch the first few races and adjust my strategy accordingly. One thing too, if there's a driver that gets hot, it pays to jump on board. Like tonight, Sam Woodger, he won 3 in a row. He's got his 4th win. So if there's a driver that seems like they're driving with a lot of confidence, jump on board by all means.
That's definitely true. I remember one of my best nights playing Hoosier Park was, I believe it was Trace Tietrich having like 6 or 7 winners, and I kind of caught the last 3. I think it was races 13, 14, and 15, and who knows what night that was, because he seems to do that quite a bit. But for sure, definitely something to consider there. And yeah, gosh, that is such a long stretch. There is no track more than Hoosier where I am just, it seems like, you know, I've got a lead and I think I'm home, and then all of a sudden I'm just crying out for that wire that never seems to come.
I know. Exactly. I'm grinding it out, trying. I'm just begging for the wire. I agree with you there. A number of times, my pick 4 or pick 5 tickets have been destroyed by that long quarter mile stretch. So I feel your pain there.
So Emily, with our limited time left, we'll go through this card and kind of a unique fashion here. I've got a couple of what I assume will be the heavier favorites on the card. And just for our players' benefit, I'm going to ask you, do you think we can try to beat them? Or, you know, are we better off just kind of singling them in a pick 4, pick 5, something like that, to try to make some money? And then, of course, along the way, we will give out some price plays and best bets. And let's kick it right off in race 1. These are the Trotters, the H Stallions and Gelding's Final. What a Swan, 9 for 25 this year, is your 4-5 morning line favorite. Do we try to beat him or do we single him?
I think we try to beat him here, Edison. You know, this horse obviously has been racing well. He's got 9 wins, but he can be a touch inconsistent for my liking. And I say that, and he's been super consistent this season, but just the way that this race shapes up, I think you try to beat him. I think there's a couple horses in here. I like Swan in Motion, Tim Tietrich. Brits to Jessies is sneaky good in these spots. So I don't think you have to settle for a short price on What a Swan. I think you try to beat him.
Race 2, the Indiana Sire Stakes Age Mares Trotting Final, May Baby at 4-5 from the rail. Beat him or single him?
This is a tough one for me, because it just depends on what May Baby shows up. She has won 3 of 19. She obviously had a great 3-year-old campaign, but she's making that step up from 3 to 4. I wouldn't single her, honestly. I like Grand Swan in this spot. I like more airtime a little bit here. I think May Baby is obviously the horse to beat, but I wouldn't single her here.
Yeah, I also kind of like more airtime. One, coming, saw a little bit of the Meadowlands this summer. In fact, I almost considered that my price play, but my price play flipping back will be race 7, the 2-year-old Phillies Super Final for the Trotters, $250,000. And see, I'm going to single a likely favorite would by Mohawk 2-year-old Trotters. Here, I'll try for the price play and hope for chaos. So hopefully, form flip Mohawk, chaos 2-year-old Trotters at Hoosier. And hopefully for me, Tim Tietrich has my best bet and my price play. So hopefully he's the hot driver tomorrow night. And we'll try the 4 Simply Right for him here. He got acquainted with this one at the Delaware County Fairgrounds during a little jug week and ended up winning a stakes event out there from the rail, took over past 3/4, got the job done as your even money favorite, and then took the trip north back up to Hoosier Park in that 6th leg of the Indiana Sire Stakes and came with a good 3rd place effort. Seemed to improve nicely there with Tim Tietrich. A 5-1 on the board, was parked out through the opening quarter and ended up having to take the tuck there into the pocket. So for sure, with that inside post here tonight, post 4 instead of post 7, maybe she will get to the top, and maybe that's where she's going to like it best. But the 4 Simply Right with Tim Tietrich, 8-1. I'll try my price play there in race 7.
Yeah, I like it. Simply Right has been racing well. Talk about favorites. Flurry, obviously going to be the favorite. She's the divisional leader, but I don't think you'll get a price, but I'm going to try to beat Flurry with the 1, Eminem's Dream. This filly has just been super impressive. In 7 starts, she's been on the board in 6 of them. She draws the rail position here. Last time out, talking about their last starts, Flurry, she obviously won by 3 lengths, 55-1. She looks super sharp doing it, but Eminem's Dream just simply flawless in that last effort. Looked like she could have gone another lap and still got the job done. So I like giving him a dream in this spot. If you happen to catch a price, I think you should pounce on it. But, you know, Tim Tietrich, like you said, he came to drive Simply Right. Obviously, he saw something about these fillies. He's driving 2 for Annette tomorrow night. And obviously, he saw something about these fillies that he liked. So, you know, I'm right there with you. I think that, you know, you might catch a price here.
So in race 8, we're back to try to beat them or single them. Indiana Sire Stakes, the Age Mares final for the Pacers, 70,000. Rockin' Nola, the 5, going to start at 3-5 on the morning line.
Yeah, this was a candidate for my best bet of the night, Edison, because quite frankly, each and every week I try to beat her, and just simply these mares are just not to the level that she's at. I think you're actually going to see her in the Breeders' Crown, so you'll get a chance to see her up close and personal. I think they're going to go to the Breeders' Crown with her after this race. So, you know, she deserves a shot. She's just been, you know, manhandling these mares all season long. And like I said, each and every week I try to beat her, and each and every week she proves me wrong. So she's a single for me.
Well, certainly hope we will get to see her. And hey, I'll take the opportunity here for the 60-second promo that, we are back at the Meadowlands starting a week from tomorrow, next Friday night, October 22nd, and Saturday, October 23rd at 12 noon, and then the following Friday and Saturday, 6:15 p.m. and noon, respectively, for the Breeders' Crown Eliminations that first weekend, the Breeders' Crown Finals the following weekend. Unfortunately, I will miss the Saturday, October 23rd card at the Meadowlands. 12 noon start there, 12:30 at Freehold, so my calling duties at Freehold will take precedence next Saturday, but the other 3 nights I will be there, and that will be my first Breeders' Crown experience, so for sure looking forward to that.
That will be awesome for you.
So next, race 10, the Indiana Sire Stakes 3-year-old Philly Super Final, on the pace, $250,000, and well, I guess we can kind of play beat 'em or single 'em, but I know that it is your best bet, so you are definitely going to be singling her here.
Yeah, Hot Mess Express, best bet of the night. We were talking about Rockin' Nola just being a step ahead of these mares. Similar story here with Hot Mess Express. Kobe's Gigi has been, the most likely candidate to beat her because, honestly, Edison, I thought Something Beautiful, she is a super nice filly. I thought she, you know, maybe was going to give Hot Mess Express a run for her money last week, but she sat on her back and finished 3rd. So that just, you know, kind of shows me that Hot Mess Express, like I said, is just kind of a touch above the rest of these fillies. Kobe's Gigi, like I said, has been racing extremely well. She's coming into this race in super form, but she draws a tough assignment from post nine, and she's done her best work on the front. So to me, all systems here point to Hot Mess Express. She's a single for me. She's my best bet of the night. And like I said, I think she's just a step ahead of the rest of these fillies.
Yeah, I've been trying to beat Hot Mess Express a good bit this year at the Meadowlands. I know she started the year with you guys at Hoosier and then came up with us at the Meadowlands for a while, and then kind of been everywhere here in stakes season up to Woodbine and back to you guys a little bit now, and, you know, Red Mile for that qualifier and here, there, and everywhere. And yeah, I think I've reached the point where it's not worth trying to beat her. So yeah, 10 for 12 lifetime. She'll look to make it 15 for 22 lifetime tomorrow night and 11 for 13 this year. So she has been a very, very good one for sure. So next, flipping back to race 12, and this will be a twofold question here for you, Emily. The Indiana Sire Stakes two-year-old colt and gelding super final on the pace for $250,000. Question A is, give a little promo here, we do have a guaranteed late pick for a pool. And then B is going to be for the 7, fulfilling my destiny, the 4-5 favorite, for that guaranteed pick four. Do we start by going deep or singling her?
So $20,000 guaranteed pick four pool. That's races 12, 13, 14, and 15. And worth noting there, Edison, that we typically have 14 races. So for those folks that, you know, maybe regular Hoosier Park players, the late pick four is actually a race later there. So races 12 through 15, because we added that 15th race. And speaking of that 15th race, we also have a $15,000 guaranteed Hoosier High Five. So some great wagering opportunities tomorrow. Like you said, for this Friday night card. And then we've got a very heavy favorite in Fulfilling My Destiny, another promo for you that I think this horse is going to the Breeders' Crown. James Yoder has said that they actually set out the last round of stakes action. And that's because they were pointing towards this race and then right into the Breeders' Crown, a limbs and finals, and, you know, wanted to give him a bit of a breather on this end. So this horse is, you know, here's an honest question. He's the best horse in the race. I'm not going to single him because I really like the two Ponda Warrior. He's been racing well for trainer Jay Hostetler. And he adds Lasix tonight, which I think could be key. You know, the horse came up a little flat last week after sitting the pocket on a few horses. And so he adds Lasix. So that's interesting to me. I think Fulfilling My Destiny obviously is the horse to beat and would not be mad at anybody for singling him. But I'm going to use Ponda Warrior because I think he gets the pocket trip here. And with the addition of Lasix, I think this horse is a very talented individual in his own regard.
Well, some good info to have there, and I will probably then include that one on my own late pick four tomorrow, which again, a $20,000 guaranteed late pick four pool there at Hoosier Park, races 12 through 15. So we move on to race 13. We'll get my best bet here, the Indiana Sire Stakes three-year-old Colts and Gelding Super Final on the pace for $250,000. The four, Roll'em, again, going back to Tim Tietrich here, this time for trainer Ron Burke. A nice win last time out, coming first over there through the stretch and got there by 3/4 of a length, has 6 wins from 17 starts this year, has really come around nicely as a three-year-old, only had 2 wins from 11 starts last year, but again, those 6 wins this year, including that 49-1 mark at Hoosier Park back in leg 5 back in late August, and generally has just kind of done it nicely from off the pace, which, you know, much like we talked about with by Mohawk, same thing here, going for $250,000, you can get some kind of crazy things going on the front end. So this is one that for sure will be happy to sit back and just, you know, watch anything crazy unfolding before him and just, well, roll them late, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. This horse, this is actually, you know, my favorite race on the program because I think it's so wide open. So competitive, I should say. Roll them, obviously, super candidate. He had some braking issues early on in the season, but hats off to Ron Burke because he's got him straightened out. And just like you said, you know, this is the type of horse that is not pace dependent. I think that he has shown that he can just fly home with the best of them. I think he fits this track so nicely, and you get the addition of Tietrich. So he's a very, very viable best bet there. A couple other horses in here worth mentioning. The 9 Goldie's Legacy, Yannick into drive. He drove this horse to a Kentucky Sire Stakes Championship. Will be interesting to see. The post draws didn't really get interesting to me until we get to here, because you see Goldie's Legacy drawing the 9, and he was heavily favored last week, Kentucky Sire Stakes champion. As I said, Yannick stuck around to drive. He came is coming back to drive this horse and draws a tough assignment from the outside here. He's been on the front, so that's going to make things interesting, particularly when you have a horse like Virgo, who also has been racing extremely well for Dylan Davis. So this 13th race is going to be a barn burner. I'm very much looking forward to it. And a very competitive group nonetheless. You know, typically you have a couple standouts, but I think the 3-0 Pacing Colt division this year, for whatever reason, is just all across the board, very competitive, very wide open.
So Emily, final race on the program to discuss, race 15, the Indiana Sire Stakes 3-year-old Colt and Geldings. This is the consolation on the pace for 25,000. Twofold question again. You already alluded to it, but we'll make you say it again. So A, the promo for a Super I-5 guarantee, and then B, hey, we really want to know about that Super I-5 guarantee, because you're going to give us a price play that we can put on top to really make this Super I-5 pay.
Yeah, Edison, and we're swinging for the fences because he's 12-1. We've got that $15,000 guarantee on the high five, which is the Pendafecta. Reduced takeout on that as well, so it's a great wager. 12% reduced takeout, 20-cent minimum wager on that sequence as well. $15,000 guarantee. We've got a full field of 10, and worth noting that 10 is a trailing starter. Probably should have noted that at the top of the handicapping segment, but for those that are new, the 10 is a trailing starter here at Hoosier Park. And so we got 9 on the gate. And like you said, I think, again, this is the consolation for 3-year-old Pacing Colt and Geldings. So just like we talked about that final, you know, being wide open, I think much the same story here with this 15th race. And as you can see by the morning line, you know, there's a lukewarm favoritism on the 2 Jolsey Hanover at 3-1 from the Ron Burke barn. He is the horse to beat, in my opinion. I'm going to try to beat him with the 1 primary colors. Here's a colt by JK End of an Era out of course, that Breeders' Crown champion, Colors of Virgin. He was unraced as a 2-year-old because he's a big, growthy, young 2-year-old that just needed some time to grow up. And that's exactly what he did. He's a huge horse, but for a big horse, he's got a lot of speed and he's had really bad trips. I know you look at his lines and you're thinking, okay, this horse doesn't have much of a shot, but he really has run into some traffic issues and just had some terrible trips. He consistently paces home in 26. He draws the rail. He gets a new pilot tonight in Ricky McCumber, who I think is going to, you know, perhaps get his marching orders because, you know, the horse has got 16 starts. He's got just 26,000 made. So for his 3-year-old year. So it's time to pick it up. And I think this horse will be on go. And like I said, he's 12-1. So I think he's got to, you know, put his best foot forward. He's going to have his work cut out for him beating a horse like Jolsey Hanover. But I've watched this horse all season and he's literally had excuse after excuse after excuse. And I think he's got to throw all that away and he'll be on go tomorrow. So I'm going to go with Primary Colors as my long shot of the program. He's 12-1 on the morning line.
Well, hopefully, if we need a good get out, bet here at the end of the night, that could fall out,
right?
For sure be a good one on top if we can hit that super high five. So Emily, that is wraps up our time here talking about the 15 races at Hoosier Park tomorrow night. Last thing before we wrap it up here, we also, much like with my Mohawk, offer free programs at Harris Hoosier Park. So the website for fans to go and get their free program for tomorrow night.
Yeah, so free program each and every night at Hoosier Park. You can download a free program on our website, www.harrishoosierpark.com, and you'll click on the racing tab, scroll to the bottom. You'll see a button for click here to download your free live racing program. So you just go to harrishoosierpark.com, click on the racing tab, and scroll to the bottom. You'll see the tab, and you'll click on it and again to be able to download a free program. That's every night at Hoosier Park. We're racing all the way through December 4th this year, Edison. So we're late in the season. And so a lot of great racing left, even after, you know, we got the Breeders' Crown coming up for you guys, which is exciting. We've still got some stakes after that. We'll have the Monument Circle and a few stakes here as well, on November 5th. So still some great racing, Grand Circuit racing left at Hoosier Park for the season as well.
And it is always a 6:30 PM first post time for you guys. And, the days of the week you guys will race then the rest of this meet.
So we're Wednesday through Saturday now. Once we get through the month of October, we back down to a Thursday, Friday, Saturday program. And then we actually are racing on the night before Thanksgiving and Thanksgiving this year. So I'll be eating some turkey and handicapping races at Hoosier Park. But like I said, Wednesday through Saturday, for the most part, we go through December 4th. And like you said, that 6:30 first post.
Yeah, you know, it's been a new thing lately. I think I saw Wood by Mohawk is also going Thanksgiving night this year. I know Rideau Carlton generally does it, at least on the standard bred side on Thanksgiving. And then obviously the thoroughbreds, you know, traditional fairgrounds opening day on Thanksgiving. I know right by me, Laurel Park always races Thanksgiving day. So always good to get some holiday racing action there, especially for you guys evenings. So at least you'll get a chance to get the daytime Thanksgiving family celebration, hopefully.
That's right.
So, Emily, thank you so much for joining us on the show here tonight.
Well, thank you for having me. I really appreciate it. I had some technical, I don't want to tell on myself, but had some technical issues at the start of the show. So appreciate your patience and, you know, appreciate what you do and what you bring to the sport. It's truly refreshing and enjoy listening to your podcast and all your guests. So thank you for what you do. And like I said, thanks for having me on the show. Look forward to hopefully meeting you in person and working with you again soon.
Well, thank you so much for the kind words there, Emily. And yeah, hopefully we will get a chance maybe at the end of next month to cross paths at Hoosier just before you guys wrap up your meet. For anyone that wants to continue the conversation with you or I, we can both be found on Twitter. For you, it's at HPEmilyG, and kind of rhymes, actually. And for me, it is at Edison_1999_. So that will just about wrap up the time we have here for this episode of First Over with Edison Hatter. But again, we will wish you the best of luck in all your wagering endeavors this weekend, be it Friday night at Hoosier Park, be it Saturday night at Wood by Mohawk, or anywhere else that you may place a wager this weekend. Hopefully they will be winning ones for you. And we will talk to you next time on First Over with Edison Hatter.